It's very interesting. Short while ago, sitting in the reception room with people, and I was talking with a lady, and we're just talking about people. And this thing in people that this thing in people that seems to be hidden, and just the and something inside us generally that's sort of held in by culture, by society, which is always trying to get out, looking for some sort of release. And I was saying how that in bowing, when people bow, maybe like to the shrine, to the Buddha Rupa, to monks, then the whole purpose of this is being able to let go, to release this thing that holds on to individuality, that holds on to self-importance. Like in the West, it's very difficult for people to bow down to things like religious objects or the idea of bowing to the Buddha, and especially like a monk who is another person, because we consider that. Why should I bow down to this other person? You know, why are they any better than me? Am I in some way relinquishing? Am I behaving in an inferior way? Is this implying I'm inferior to this person in some way? And this is naturally the response. You know, I'm not bowing down to anybody. So it's that thing which people maintain, you know, the individuality, this need to defend that, you know, this thing to maintain that. It's as if everybody, every individual is, you know, in a sense at war in the society, at war with everybody else, and they have to maintain their individuality, their status. Their uniqueness, their identity. You know, the keeping up with the neighbours. See, the thing about this is there's something insidious about it, because it's something which everybody is automatically engaged in. But it isn't a particularly conscious thing. It's such a natural response that most of the time it isn't even noticed. It isn't consciously brought attention to. And we know we could be, you know, living next door to people for years, or people across the road, and in like an unconscious way, we are in some way. In competition to them, you know, we're competing with them, or we're comparing ourselves to them, or we're either conforming to what we consider to be their expectations. And it's ridiculous in a sense that although we struggle to maintain this sort of individuality and this difference, and you know, almost as we want a dominance in being me. You know, this thing that is me is extremely important. You know, it needs to be respected. It needs to be acknowledged. It needs to be noticed. But at the same time, we're caught in this web, this social web, where it's very necessary for us also to be seen to conform, you know, to be the same. You know, to our peers, those people where we work, and friends. And there's this competition that's going on the whole time. You know, there's an inner struggle which we're coping with, and a lot of the time it's just simply unconscious. You know, no one wants to be considered to be inferior. There's a struggle not to be seen to be inferior. You know, in fact, we like to give the impression that we're special in some way, or we're well off. You know? When I say we, I'm talking about I'm not talking about us particularly, people in this room, but people generally, just people generally. And I include myself in that, because also even in monasteries. There's a great deal of status. You know, takes a long time, yeah, to deal with this. You know, it takes a long time to actually see it. You know, you see it by degrees, gradually. You get ideas about it. You know, and you work with it. You become conscious of it, but it's always going into deeper and deeper degrees of realization. You know, you don't know. You don't really appreciate the extent to which you're actually caught in this whole status consciousness, you know, this individual identity, you know, which you hold on to, you know, which you don't want to give it up, because it's just something that's very precious. And so, in society, that you can call this the Jones, the keeping up with the Joneses rat race. The Joneses rat race. And people are competing, and, you know, underneath, you could say that you're being judged, and if you go up a notch in status, then it seems to put a pressure on others around you. You know, that they have to conform. You know, for instance, certainly around wages. You know, if your neighbour's wages goes up, you know, they suddenly is as if they're at a higher social standard, and you know, and just unconsciously, there's a feeling that I can't really relax when I'm in the company of this person until I equal the balance in some way. And you know, even maybe if you suddenly hear that the neighbour's doing well, you know, and suddenly you know you might be doing well, and the neighbour's doing well, the neighbour might be a friend of yours, you know, generally, and he comes in for tea, you share a certain amount of activities with him, you're on friendly terms with him, but there's always this status thing going. And, you know, and subconsciously, you might feel, you know, he suddenly might lose his job, he might get the sack, you know, and there might be something else, you know, a sense of relief, you know. There's something inside that says, glad to hear that, you know, I need that. I can relax a bit around this. I don't have to worry about this fella. In fact, he can start worrying about me now. Or even more insidiously, unconsciously, there may be something in us that's kind of hoping that some misfortune might happen over that side of the fence, so that their status goes down a bit. Yeah, because basically, people don't like this. You know, we don't like. We're caught up in it, and really, people want to relax, don't they? I mean, people want friends. People want to be with people that that they can relax with. You know, isn't it nice to think that the sort of friend that you can just be yourself? You don't have to put on airs. You don't have to you don't have to watch what you're saying. You don't have to be divisive in some way. You don't have to prove yourself. You don't have to be anything special. You can just relax. You know, whatever you do with this person, even if you do something bad or wrong, because they're a friend, you know, they're going to sympathise with you. It's not going to be that bad. They're going to forgive you. You know, I mean, underneath that possibility is there, and underneath that is, you know, what we're all aiming for. We all want such friends. We want to live in a community which is as friendly as possible, where we can relax as much as possible. It is interesting, I was reading a newspaper article some time back, and there was a survey done by a social server, and they went through just about almost the entire cross section of everybody. This was in America. It was quite a big survey. They spent a lot of time doing, but they did a good sort of cross section of trades, employments, professions, generally. And amongst all the questions they asked these people, they asked them, are you satisfied? Are you satisfied with your salary? Are you satisfied with your wage? And generally these people said, well, they were making sufficient money. They were making sufficient money to cope with the situation, but they could really do with 20% more on their wages. And this, the whole point of the publication of this survey was that this statement was absolutely general just about throughout the whole of the survey. Just about, you know, it was an incredibly high percentage of people that said, things are okay, but 20% more in my salary, I'd be okay. I'd feel happy. Things would be comfortable. You know, things aren't really comfortable now. You know, I'm getting by, but another 20%, and that would do it for me. And the reason this was published is because it was so general. Just about everybody had the same idea. In other words, what you could say was that all of these people, it wasn't anything to do with the 20%. It was this basic feeling in people generally that, you know, they can never be absolutely satisfied with what they've got. Yeah? You know, what is this? There's something, you know, that's going to always make us want more. And then it carried on that other question there was, I thought this was an amazing result. Then they said, if your neighbour took a drop in their wages so that their wages came down, so their wages came down a certain percentage, would you be happy to do the same? Would you be happy to do the same? And live with 20% less in your wages? And they said, yes. Yes, they thought about it. They said, yes. You know, I could do that. If the neighbour was getting 20% less, then I'd be happy to settle for 20% less. So there was this incredible, you know, sort of contradiction, you know, that first they needed 20% more, then they were happy to do with 20% less if the neighbour got 20% less. You know? So there was this sort of subtle indication that the reason they needed more, you know, was their defence against this encroaching neighbour, you know, that they had to keep up with or keep in check with, you know, this sort of step situation that he gets a bit better off, then I have to get a bit better off, then he gets a bit better off, then I have to get a bit better off, you know, and so. When it comes right down to the individual thinking like that, you know, then it shows you, you know, why the whole economy, you know, is geared the way it is. You know, this need for economic growth at any cost. You know, why it is so fierce, and why it is just so paramount. Why it is just so important. Why it is more important than anything else in politics. This economic growth, you know, not really the quality of life, just this power that comes from economic growth. But also, one of the things which is quite noticeable, this was a psychological article, that people also, when people were in these situations where they were sort of constantly at threat in some way, then there tended to be some sort of resentment, some sort of grudge. There's a grudge against these people. And then these resentments and grudges would sometimes flare up. They, you know, people could take them inside and they wouldn't acknowledge them, or they would treat them as they'd start blaming themselves in some way. And there was all sorts of tensions that were occurring because people were bearing these grudges. And then, you know, then they would sort of come out. They would suddenly flare up under all sorts of unlikely conditions. People would get into situations for any sorts of reasons where they would start getting intense blaming of themselves. And after a while, it's as if they could only take so much of this. They could only take so much of this blaming. I mean, I'm not talking now generally about people. Now I'm talking about very specific cases where things became psychological issues. This is not. I'm not talking about the general population, but it's interesting in as much as it is the human condition, which does affect everybody. It's the same pattern. You know, there is that liability at any time. And what was happening was that these people, when they became very resentful of themselves for any reason, not necessarily just the neighbours, then, because it's very difficult for them to sort of contain in themselves, they would start projecting this. But they would start sort of externalizing it, and just externalizing it on other people. When they externalized it, projected it on other people, it actually gave them an enemy. It actually gave them a sort of an enemy which they could then engage with in a far more sort of dynamic, sort of violent way. And this was quite a serious concern, that it's as if people actually needed enemies just as a means of releasing this inner tension. And once these inner tensions start, Andy was saying, you know, that it's a phenomenon these days, that these tensions in people are building up, starting and building up far more than they've ever been recorded before. So I mean, actually, this is quite serious for this age. And there was a survey I was reading in the paper some time back that in England. In the 50s, they did a survey of people who were the general contentment of people under many sort of conditions. You know, their working conditions, you know, with their wages, their living conditions, and how happy they were, how content they were. And they did this survey, and they got these readings, like either they're happy. They're very happy, they're very content, they're generally content, generally happy, or then they're discontent, or they're miserable. And then they compared this, they've just done this survey again in England, and it turns out now that people now are far more miserable, far more discontent now in England, this is across the whole country, than they were 50 years ago. You know, conditions are such now that the people in England are just fed up, you know, in just so many, in so many areas, about so many things. So that's just by the by, that incident. But the thing that I'm I'm really getting at here is the fact that this this blaming, blaming and disliking is something that people tend to do as a matter of course. When you just think of all the range of situations that we are involved in our lives, the connection with people, and all the potentials for people get upset and get into situations where they may even get depressed or unhappy, many situations, and so people are at loggerheads with people. They get into fights, rows, struggles, all sorts of tensions. And then sort of dislike can happen, even hating. And the problem with this situation is, and this is where it actually now comes into the scriptures, this is where the teachings actually are involved, that this situation has to be very, very clearly seen, very, very, very clearly registered in the mind, that not to allow this discontent and this hating to actually occur, because when that happens, when you start hating people, then basically you're just adding hate to yourself. You have to be very, very diligent, very concerned to watch this. This is why you do need a mindful practice to make sure that you can stay with this the whole time. Because this hatred, the Buddha says that hatred cannot cure anything. Hatred breeds hatred. It can only simply make the situation worse. And all the situations that happen in the world, many problems and troubles, what we really need to do, what is most necessary, is to practice forgiveness. Forgiveness isn't easy. It's a very difficult thing. It's something that you have to work on, because we aren't natural forgivers. We can be generous, but we aren't always natural forgivers. And so this business of actually looking with real sincerity into yourself, any sort of situation that arises where you can see grudges, you can see any sort of grudge that arises. This is where you can use your neighbours. You can use your neighbours very effectively like this. People you work with, people you live with, people that live across the fence. Just watch this discontent. Any sort of grudge or discontent or this thing which boosts up the ego to such an extent that it is underneath finding some means of some sort of discontent. And you can know right there that some sort of grudge is happening. So this looking, this is why our meditation practice is very, very important. Because what it does is, it helps you to focus. It helps you to look in at yourself and to see these situations arising in you, to see this tendency for discontent and for grudges to arise. And just the fact that we don't notice it, that is the dangerous thing. Now, I notice a lot of the time when I'm reading newspapers, there's all these conflicts going on around the world, and I get these feelings that it's so unjust. There's these big countries attacking small countries. There are people, minorities being repressed. A lot of violence. Just that what seems a lot of unfairness. And I can read these papers. I can get quite worked up about this. I have to keep remind myself. You're a monk. You're supposed to be detached. Look at this. You know, you have to, you know, because like we're not encouraged to read newspapers, but you know, the fact is, you know, in the papers there is a lot of real dharma, a lot of real human conditions. But of course, the practice, you know, the practice in meditation, not just monks, practice in meditation, is also to, you know, to detachment, to see this, to watch it, and so watch it, watch how it affects you. And so I'd say to myself, well, you know, I'm not involved here. This has nothing to do with me. It's always been going on. You know, this violence has been going on for eternity, you know, since history. It's no different all through my life. Anytime I cared to pick up a newspaper, you know, there'd been something of this sort. There's some war going on somewhere. So I mustn't, you know, I've got to keep a sense of perspective here and not get personally involved. That was it. It was noticing that getting personally involved, identifying with one of the sides that were being put on in an unfair way. And so after, I mean, I could do this, you know, because I'd read and say, oh yeah, stand back. But then on various other occasions, it would come back again, get caught up in the same situation. And then I'd look, then what I did was, I decided to look at this. I said, what is this? You know, I am not involved with these people. This is happening somewhere else around the world. I'm not personally involved, you know, it's not my situation. There are lots of other people that are personally involved with this. I don't have to get concerned. I don't have to get upset. And it doesn't have to cause me any irritation inside. But what I saw was that, you know, as I kept looking at this, just started to feel it. As it started, I just watched the feeling. And the feeling was always the same. No matter what the issue, the feeling was always the same. It started off in the same way and started to sort of get worked up. Then after a while, you know, almost getting into violence. And I could see that what it was this basic sense, this basic discontent that was in me. You know, it was this personal discontent which was unresolved. And the strange thing was, there was a thing in me that actually needed situations where there were discontent. There was something in me that had a need to find discontent in the world to relieve something in me. And I began to realize this. You know, I'm being conned by this. There's a need to get. There was this sense of indignation. You know, this is not right. This is unjust. This is unacceptable. Why does the world allow this? You know, a feeling of injustice, very, very poignant feeling of injustice. You know, and you know, I mean, because it's interesting that one of the situations that used to occur was at one time in this same issue that's been going on for ages, I used to be backing the other side. At one time, I used to sympathise with the other sides. So somewhere along the line, I've swapped over, you know, so I don't really have any true, you know, connection or concern with these people. It's just this thing that wants to, that needs to side with the underdog in some way, but actually needs discontent and injustice. And I saw that it's this need, this thing of sort of righteous indignation that needs to explode and let this out. And once I saw that, you know, I realized that, you know, that's not me. You know, it's not me. It's not my concern. It's just a situation of, you know, a pent up discontent, you know, coming from, you know, who knows where for how long. And this basic underlying discontent, you know, this comes down to the sort of the basic human condition. You know, it's always there. In fact, we're always in some way or other trying to overcome this, trying to get away from this. It's always following us around somewhere, and there's something that is always finding something in the external world, some way of expressing it. And you know, the Buddha said, you know, the truth is, this condition is samsara. You know, in other words, this is the conditioned realm. Beings live and are the production of a conditioned situation. Everything is conditioned. You know, everything is either, you know, is here by some sort of cause or some sort of effect. And it's an ongoing thing. There isn't any sort of stasis. There isn't a stabilizing point when it doesn't happen. It's always going in either one direction or another. I mean, that's as long as there is ignorance. I mean, the whole point of the teaching is, of course, to see this, then you can stabilize it. But as long as that isn't seen, then there is this running around in circles. There is this chasing after. There is this running away. And either, you know, either it's our surroundings that are hitting us, or in some way we are hitting our surroundings. And in fact, that's happening all the time. The whole time our surroundings are hitting us. I mean, they might not actually, you know, they might not be hitting us. But the thing is, we believe they are, you know. We only have to believe they are, because we don't have any set actual way of knowing precisely, you know, what the situation is. A lot of the time, we have buttons, you know, people press our buttons. We get sort of tender points. People touch us where we're very tender. I mean, they might not intend to do that, but people touch a tender spot on us, and then we actually do believe we are being attacked, you know, and that it's very painful. Even if they're just touching us with a feather, you know, if it's a very painful spot, you know, it will be painful. So there's no way, in other words, this situation is totally volatile the whole time. It can't come to an end by itself. There'll always be discontent. People will always be arranging and organizing life, you know, even through governments, always trying to adjust, always making these adjustments to get some sort of stabilization. But of course, you know, in a world where everyone, you consider everyone's your enemy, even if you don't do that consciously, I mean, even if neighbours are doing it that live next door to each other, then inevitably, it's exactly the same process, exactly the same human process, is happening on an international level. And so whatever adjustment is made at this end, it's going to upset the balance at that end. You know, so someone's going to have to make an adjustment. You know, like the arms race. You know, it's intolerable, absolutely intolerable for someone in the world to be in a position where they don't have the latest, you know, the latest up-to-date weapons. You know, even when it's absurd. You know, like even all the tiniest, you know, third world countries now. There's great arms race for these third world countries to develop the nuclear bomb, you know, because it's the ultimate thing, you know. So, you know, it's a thing you can't win, you know. Like America spent billions and billions of dollars on building some defense system, and somehow or other, infiltrators got into their defense system and got the plans, and the next thing, China's got the same system, you know. They've suddenly got it, you know. So the whole pointlessness of this operation is, if you build a weapon, doesn't matter how sophisticated it is, actually, in the end, it's going to turn against yourself. All you're trying to do is get an immediate jump on someone else, you know. At any given moment, you just want the best weaponry, but you know the next step is that those exact weapons you have invented to defend yourself, now the enemy has got them, and now they are your enemy. They're aimed at you. You know? So this is samsara. You know? This is the way situations are. So what can we do? Where does this leave us? In the same way, you know, it left me. You know, the thing is that You do need to detach. Basically, what you can do is you can't change the world. However, the world is going to end up, but you can release yourself. You can free yourself by your practice. You know? All you need to do, you don't need to convert everybody. You don't need to change anybody. A lot of people think, you know, the people they live with or the people they live next door to, they have to convert them. They have to change into the same system as them. People, you get a lot of people like this, really feel that they really need to change other people. You know, and actually you can't. You can't really change other people. You can change yourself. I mean, it's extremely difficult changing yourself, but but you do have a chance there. So, very simply, that forgiveness is just so relevant. I mean, with all religions teach this, but it isn't really given enough space. That when you forgive somebody, it's not just a matter of you're doing them a favour, you know, you're doing them a favour, or you're just forgetting what they've done. You know, you're putting up with the situation. You know, you're being magnanimous. You know, when you forgive somebody, you really make the most of that, because what you're doing is when you're forgiving someone, you're actually letting go of something. That thing in you, which needs contention. Gets relief, you know. Actually, gets relief from attacking other people. You know, it's like self-pity. You know, enjoying resentment, which a lot of people do. You know, there's like a negative profit in hate. Hatred can be very juicy. There's a lot of energy in it. You know, get you worked up, get you very excited. You know. But enjoying, you know, that sort of perverse resentment is basically self-pity. You know? And self-pity doesn't get you anywhere. You know? You have to act. And so, you know, make the most of forgiving all the people that you have resentments for, whoever they are. You know, they are your actual benefits. They are your chance to actually release this thing in you which holds on to the things that are keeping you like a small self, a small being. This thing with its principles and its pride and its identity, that keeps you a very tiny, closed-in, contracted thing. You know, now to be released from that, you know, the opposite to that is openness. Openness is you know. This term they have these days, you know, this the new era, cosmic consciousness. You know, it's good a phrase as any. You know, but opening out, getting away from that, making the most of things like forgiveness. You know, really, really let go. You know, look at it in detail. In other words, all what's being said here is every aspect of your life. Just keep looking at it. All the things that you experience, all the negative things. You know, and all the positive things, just question them, just keep looking at them, because what we do is we tend to just go along, whether we're happy, you know, or whether we're miserable, we tend to be caught up in a momentum which just is a habit pattern. We're caught up in plodding along in a habit pattern. So even if we're experiencing positiveness and happiness, it's still just this expected habit pattern. And it's doing the same thing as just reliving. It's just a rehash, chewing the cud of all our old habits. It isn't really opening to a true communication and connecting with an open happiness. So keep actually questioning and keep looking at this. Keep looking inside. Every experience you get, you know, do this as much as you can. Because this is the point of your sitting practice. The sitting practice is when you're keeping your attention here. The whole point is you're keeping the attention here and you're practicing the vipassana, that you're simply watching what this mind does, watching its behavior, seeing that conditioning. And of course, the positive side of conditioning is that you can now influence that conditioning. You can influence in that conditioning into positive conditioning. That the Buddha said that there is the karma, the karma which is the end, the karma which is karma for the end of karma. In other words, if it's positive karma, then positive conditioning, then you're opening up. People, in other words, you know, people who are kind people, they are just naturally open. You know, they open up, and they have far more opportunity of connecting with release. All acts of kindness, you know, make the most of kindness and generosity, giving, really make the most of these things, because you open up and that self in there, it shrinks, it disappears, and the big self opens up. Of course, the opposite to this is, you know, hating, you become a contracted, solid, miserable, mean, nasty little thing. You know this expression, we have this wise expression. You know, a lot of these old expressions, you know, in the language, you know, actually come from wise points. You know this expression, birds of a feather flock together. What you notice is that people who tend to actually be sort of nasty in their personalities, they tend to actually get caught in situations where they are in the same situation with people of similar natures. And that's because when they're nasty in their speech and their attitudes and their behaviour, they're doing it to people a lot of the time that are in a similar situation. You notice that in social situations, it's as if they filter through. People filter through and conglomerate in situations where they tend to group with people of a similar nature. You know, like the classic condition of this, a classic example of this, say, is a prison situation where prisoners will get caught in a situation where, I mean, there's a whole range of all different standards of prisons, but, you know, the worst possible situations where the people in these prisons, the inmates, it's just hatred. They hate each other, and there's no concern for each other whatsoever, ever, and they just indulge in just being as hateful as they can to each other, the wardens, and that's the only way of relief. You know, the idea of being kind or saying a word of kindness, they just couldn't do that. It would just be totally, they would be unable to do that because it would be so inappropriate to them. They can only respond with some sort of mean, cruel thing. And this is the truth of the nature of samsara. You know, this is how it happens. Now, to get away from that, you know, you make the most of this ability that we have, this natural ability to be kind and to forgive. You know, so work on that. You know, don't be so quick to harbour grudges when people do things to upset you. Be willing, you know, be willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, because it doesn't hurt you. It doesn't hurt you, really, if you forgive somebody. And not only that, you feel great afterwards. You feel a lot better. Because naturally something has been released. While you're harbouring a grudge, you're harbouring some sort of indigestible thing. You know, as if you've eaten something you can't digest. You know, you're experiencing a form of indigestion. Psychic, spiritual indigestion, you know. And you want to get rid of that. And you just want to vomit that up. Get it out of the system. It's not good for you. Of course, that's what hatred is, isn't it? That's what hatred is. It's turning. It's making you, because it contracts in on itself. And it turns into like a black hole. You know, it starts after a while. It can't expand outwards. It can only go in and get denser and denser and denser. And of course, what happens when these people die is they go to the hell realms. You know, the Buddha explains, you know, that hell realms do really exist. You know, and they are dreadful places. You know, they are. Once you get caught in these hell realms, that, you know, that the implosion of it, you know, the density of it, is utterly, you know, utterly almost impossible to get out. You have to simply wait until that karma, until that dreadful karma, actually eventually burns out. So that's just about the only way you can get out of the hell realm, is to go through the whole thing until it eventually, until that bad karma is used up, and then you can come out of it. But it's very difficult when you get caught. You get caught in that momentum to get out of it. So very, very simply, you don't allow that to happen, because you do have available to you this psyche, the mentality, this whole spiritual attribute, where you can prevent that, and you can make a profit by, just forgive people. Don't allow the situation to arise where you start harboring grudges, or at least look at it. Even if you have a grudge, don't feel, I've got to get rid of this grudge, it's dreadful. I'm not going to think this, I'm not going to feel this. Because that's the same as, basically, as just saying forget it. That's not the case at all. The whole point here is that you look at it. You look at it and you see it and you feel it. Feel it exactly where it is, however deep it goes, and then find the point where you can let it go. Because it's only there because you're holding on to it. You are gripping hold of it. Something in you, you have to discover what it is that holds on, how it does it. Because it isn't you. See, this is it. This is the tricky thing. You can't just say, I'll let go. I mean, I've done this. People have really hurt me in the past, and I've just said to myself, it's pointless. This is pointless, carrying this grudge. I forgive this person. It's okay. I'm not going to hold that grudge anymore. But then on another occasion, something will happen. Some negative situation that will happen that will annoy me, and it will come up. This situation with this person that has done this dreadful thing to me, said this nasty thing to me, whatever it was. You get this replay, and it's right there. It's still the structure. And what the interesting thing is, when you do another thing that triggers it off, someone else will do something that upsets you, or some situation that upsets you. Then all these things replay. That's the same, thing rhyming in again. The same old refrain of the same old hatred. That person is still. Then you go through it again until you realise. Hang on, wait a minute. Didn't I forgive that person? No, you didn't. So he said, well, wait a minute. If I forgave that person, why is he still there? Why is this ogre of a character still there, causing me problems? And something is holding on. So, and this is the trick, of course. You have to see what is the thing that is holding on? How is it holding on? And you can only do that by really, really paying attention. In other words, your quality of being enhances to the extent that you are attentive, that you are mindful. Because you're transforming this whole thing, this whole pattern, this whole momentum, this whole basic habit pattern that you're caught in, which is samsara, basically. It's just a habit pattern that's difficult for you to find a way out of, because basically you don't identify it in the first place. You don't see it. This need to see this and let it go. So there is this need to constantly just keep looking at this. Just keep looking and looking and looking. And just the fact that seeing the basic nature of the ground, the way that this discontent always reasserts itself, no matter what situation you're in. Even if it's a lighter situation, you get away from a heavy situation, you get into a lighter situation. What a relief! It's so great to be free of that burden I've had for years. Maybe a great debt. Suddenly it's been paid off, and that's it. I've got no more problems after this. And after a while, when things calm down, then little problems start to reassert themselves, and little irritations start to happen. And you realise then it's the same sort of annoying irritation. It's not that great heavy thing, but it's the same little annoying sense of irritation, and that is always there. that sense of, that's because you're basically in a situation of discontent, which is a pattern. It's a pattern of discontent, which is always, you know, like it's like when you mow the grass. You know, you mow the grass because those seeds are still there. Sooner or later, they're going to come up again. Or we say the weeds. You know, you get cut down all the weeds, but you don't get the roots out. Sooner or later, the shoots of the weeds will come up again. It's like, you know, in the deva realms, in the heavens, you know, in the Mangala, you know, in the Mangala Sutta, the start of the Mangala Sutta is that a deva comes to the Buddha and says, devas and human beings are constantly in a state of discontent. You know, can you tell us? You know, can you tell us what's, you know, what is a true blessing? What is a true blessing for a, you know, how can we live? You know, it's not only human beings; it's devas as well. Even with their refined existence, with, you know, the incredible rewards and benefits, you know, the happiness. You know, you can imagine, you know, being as rich as you possibly can be on this planet, you know. And whatever you can buy, whatever luxuries you can buy, so your life, you know, is as comfortable as it possibly can be, you know, it's still nothing compared to the realms of the devas. You know, they've got real incredible luxury, you know? But even they, you know, are still in samsara. What they're doing is they are experiencing a very, very refined form of discontent. You know, discontent will reassert itself, and then, you know, it's always this irritation, you know, the fly in the ointment, you know, get things nearly right, and or get it going right for so long, and then it goes wrong again. You're always back here, you know. There's this thing that is never really happy, you know, especially when, you know, get, you know, a jolt which really knocks you back into the, you suddenly see who I am, this is my personality, this discontent. Here, you know, you suddenly see who you are in a certain situation, you know, all your problems, all your weaknesses, all the feelings you feel that you're inadequate, you know, suddenly come up and it's such, oh God, that's still there. You know, I have this all the time, you know. And I became a monk to get rid of my inadequacies, you know, but still, you know, every now and then a situation will happen, you know, around people, you know. Or any situation, suddenly this cavern opens, this being is still there, you know, the basic neurotic base of my personality, you know, which I do my level best 99% of the time to sort of disguise, you know, the things which I don't want anyone to know about me, you know, my weaknesses and inadequacies, you know. But of course, in situations where you have to cope with difficult situations, you know, suddenly it'll come forward again. And that's always there, you know. However, think of all the clever people in the world, and all, you know, all the incredible things in the world, and, you know, sending people, or sending machines to Mars, or people to the moon, all the incredible inventions, you know. All these people are good in a particular direction, you know. You know, the great artists, great composers, like Beethoven, you know. Beethoven, absolutely incredible music. But if you read his life story, really, a most miserable, pathetic character. You know, my goodness, you wouldn't give him the time of day. But I mean, incredible music he composed. So, you know, everyone underneath, as long as they are attuned to this basic pattern of conditioning, you know, you can never be happy. You're never happy while you're relying on conditioning, because you're constantly adjusting the mechanism, and when you make an adjustment, something over there adjusts. You know, sooner or later, you're going to end up over there, or that's going to end up over here. And you're going to be back in the same. The discontent is going to come along. You know, and not only that, you're getting older all the time. So, you know, people that identify themselves with, you know, with their body, with their health, with their beauty, you know, with how attractive they are. You know, and there's some people, you know, people don't have anything else, but they are very attractive, you know. They have no choice, you know, that everything focuses on that, you know. their attraction, you know, their attractiveness becomes very important to them. But of course, that's sad, isn't it, really? Because eventually, you know, that's been eaten away, eroded by time, and that's going to catch up with them. And they're going to be the same as the rest of us. Yeah, I say, you know, people who are genius in all sorts of fields, it's on a broad front, you know. They are, you know, that's that one particular point they are good at, you know. So, I mean, I'm not going to go through the whole range of problems and dissatisfactions of people, you know, because everybody's got them, you know. They're spread out generally in the world, and every single one of us is a good cross-section of the whole condition of unsatisfactoriness. But the benefit is, you know, the beauty of this is that we do have the Buddha went to a lot of trouble to explain to us that there is a way out of this. You know, you can overcome this. You can overcome these problems. You can overcome these problems with becoming enlightened to them. Know yourself. You know this condition, because you look into yourself, look into your basic nature, your mind, your body. You are the expression of this condition, you know, par excellence, so to speak. The Buddha said, you don't need to look any further than this mind and body to know what's happening on the other side of the universe, what conditions the other side of the universe, even if it's endless. You know, the Buddha said, you can know exactly what's going on there because it's exactly the same situation that's going on here. And you can focus on that. You can put all your attention on that. Of course, meditation is the path. You just constantly keep looking. Every opportunity to get think of all the situations that are happening to you throughout the day. You know, just actually consciously pay attention to them. Not generally, you know, because you generally do. You generally know what's going on. And if I was to ask you what you did today, any of you could probably list to me, you did this at this time, this, you know, I could do the same. But the thing is, actually consciously pay attention to that in a conscious way, and you'll see it's a whole different quality of attentiveness, and your actual awareness increases, your actual quality of mindfulness increases the quality of it, and your after a while, of course, your whole quality of being is going to increase. You're going to get more out of life. You are eventually going to, you know, your problems are going to begin to reduce because you're going to see them coming. You're going to see where you put your foot in it. You're going to see how you can prevent things. You can see how letting go of that is just so much less painful. And in fact, it's easy to let go of these things, you know, once you put your mind to it, you know. That stubbornness that doesn't want to let go of that thing that that person did to me or said to me, you know. But it only hurts you. It doesn't hurt them. You carry it around with you. You're carrying that burden around as if you're carrying lead weights around with you. You know, you're trying to live a light life. Maybe you imagine you're carrying around suitcases of lead with you all the time. And then you're complaining, you know, about, you know, your situation and what people, you know, what people do to you. Let it all go, and you're just not going to worry about what people do to you. Be totally abusable, you know, so that whatever people say to you, it just falls off, you know, it just runs away, it just cannot affect you. I mean, easy to say, but it can be done. And what else is there? That's your practice, that's the direction. It's the most valuable thing you can do, you know, make the most of it. It's right there waiting. Okay, I think the time has beaten us. I'll end it there.